Good afternoon. This is Biz Buzz Radio. I'm Katherine Johns. Michelle Rempel is with me, and our guest is Gary Whitaker, the publisher of 417 Magazine in Springfield, Missouri. You know, there are a lot of Springfields. I just noticed I almost said Springfield someplace else.
Yeah.
That's probably why you don't call your magazine Springfield, isn't it?
No, there was a Springfield magazine, and there are other places where there are Springfield magazines.
Yeah.
But if you're in Springfield, Missouri, you know you're reading about Springfield, Missouri.
Yep, got it. All right, so we have questions about publishing. We have questions about starting a business. And this whole thing about being in publishing when everybody says publishing is over, and, you know, publishing on paper at least,
right,
is over. So I hardly know where to start.
I know.
How did you get into the magazine business in the first place? Let me answer your question.
Okay.
Ask it and answer it. So you were in the news business, and you worked for radio stations and then television stations,
right,
for a long time,
right,
and moved up in the ranks in the way people do in that business, and then chucked it all, and...
They chucked me.
All right, they chucked you. But what made you decide to start something on your own as opposed to get another job? I think a lot of people face a situation like that in a career and wonder about starting something of their own.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to me about that decision.
Well, as you know, because you had a similar path in news, you are in different markets, you know, Mississippi, Florida, Atlanta, New York. So I ended up back in my hometown of Springfield, Missouri, as the general manager of a television station. There was a change of ownership, and they invited me to make myself available for other opportunities. And that we had finally gotten back to Springfield and didn't want to leave and go to another TV job, so we decided to start something. Actually, what we started was a marketing and PR firm. And the day
we would be you and
wife,
the lovely
my
Mrs.
wife,
Whitaker.
Yes, Joan and I. And so the day that... Well, I got fired. She worked at the TV station with me.
Oh.
I got fired. They forgot to fire her, so she kept showing up.
And, that's awkward.
Yeah, and they finally pulled her in and said, you know, we meant when he left that you would go. And she, you know, but she's so conscientious. She was, well, I just thought I was supposed to, you know, keep doing the job. So, but the day that I got fired, that night, we got hired by a bank to do marketing for them. And so we, after she joined me in our own marketing and PR firm, we started, you know, building business. And the magazine, people at the magazine, 417 Magazine, called and said, can we sell you some advertising because we know you represent this bank? I said, I don't know that much about the magazine, but we'll meet. Met, and the magazine was about to go out of business. So I said, I'm not going to spend the bank's money on a, you know, on this thing. But if you're interested, I'll put together a marketing plan to help you turn the magazine around. Because we were looking for clients and even, you know, some pro bono work just to keep,
right,
you know, keep in the game. And we thought, if we could brag about turning the magazine around, it'd be a good story. So we presented a marketing plan. They passed it up to the ownership of the magazine. They flew some people in, took us to lunch, and said, we love this marketing plan. So we thought we were going to get hired. And they said, and we think you should execute it as the new owner of the magazine. So they tried to sell us the magazine at lunch. And Joan's like, we got stuff to do. We got to go. We're busy. And so I looked into it and went up to the University of Missouri and asked the faculty at the journalism school, what do you think about a magazine like this?
And what did they say?
But to do two things. If you buy it, join the City and Regional Magazine Association. Chicago Magazine is part of that.
Sure.
And you go and you swap ideas with other people.
Makes sense.
And since we don't know anything about magazines, we thought that'd be a good idea. And the other thing is, they said, do refrigerator journalism. Like, what is that? They said, a city magazine like 417, if you fill it up with little articles, the kind of things you stick on the refrigerator, like, these are the best restaurants, these are the best new, you know, neighborhoods, You'll create a following. So anyway, we went back, called the guy up, and said, I think I am interested in buying it. And he said, I don't remember what it was, some ridiculous number, like $300,000, $400,000. Well, the thing was losing $15,000 a month.
He, oh, my God.
And
that
I said,
makes my heart stop.
Yeah.
And I said, well, how is something that's negative cash flowing $15,000 a month worth $300,000 or $400,000? And he said, because of your marketing plan.
Oh, I
so
love that.
I was negotiating against myself. But my parents had passed away, left my brother their house, my brother and I their house, and we sold it. And when all of a sudden, there's a little house on the north end of Springfield, we both walked away with a grand total of $39,000.
Woohoo!
So I called the guy back and said, I don't have $400,000. but I'll give you 39. And he said, that's an insult. That won't even pay for the tables and chairs. And I said, I've seen, that's all you've got are tables and chairs. You don't really have a business. And the City and Regional Magazine Association annual conference was that weekend. I said, if you change your mind and you'll take my 39, I'm going to get on a plane, go to Minneapolis to the conference and learn how to publish magazines. And he hung up on me. But about 4:45 Thursday afternoon, he called back and said, you know, when does that conference start? And I said, you know, I got to get to Minneapolis tomorrow. And he said, go, it's yours. So we bought it. We show
for
$39,000. So we show up in Minnesota at the magazine conference, and the first session is sort of a panel discussion of the new trends in the industry.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, at the beginning, they went around and said, so everybody in the room, stand up, tell us who you are, how long you've been publishing. So Joan and I stood up and said, we're Joan and Gary Whitaker from Springfield, Missouri, and we've been publishers since 4:45 yesterday afternoon. So that's it. And we really thought it was going to be kind of a side hobby to go with the marketing company that we were starting.
Ah.
But you know, we worked hard. We called all the staff together. We slashed their salaries, you know. And I think we.
I bet they were happy.
Oh, yeah.
You get a chair.
Yeah. I think we inherited 8 employees, and you know, 6 weeks later, one of them was still there.
Mm-hmm. Oh wow!
So we just kind of had to, you know, start over. But we did what they said from the University of Missouri. We started doing stories about here are the best things to do, the best, you know, places to go, and that turned into a readership, which eventually attracted advertisers and turned into getting our $39,000 back.
How long did it take to become profitable?
We bought the magazine in May, and we told her, well, the $39,000, just, we just got the magazine. We had no operating capital. We took out a home equity loan and took all the money out of our house.
Yeah. Wow. That's heart-stopping.
And that's how, so you can figure, you can do the math. If you're losing $15,000 a month,
mm-hmm.
if you've got $75,000 in equity, which is about what we had, you know where the end is.
Yeah.
And we told the staff, we're cutting your salaries, but we'll do profit sharing. If we can get to break even and make any money, we made a pledge to them that we would give half of every profit dollar back to them. And we got to break even in October.
Oh, that's great.
That's pretty fast, isn't it?
Yeah. And since then, I think in the 11 or 12 years since then, that includes the you know, the deep recession years, I think there's only been 3 quarters that we haven't been able to pay profit sharing.
Nice.
Cool.
Yeah, nice.
So.
That's very cool.
That was the long answer to how'd you end up with the magazine?
But I think it's so interesting to people because I do think a lot of people think about taking a risk and then they don't. Or they think about doing something completely different and then they don't. And they think they have to have another job, but maybe they don't. So I like the story.
And maybe a clue is to think about almost the opposite of what you do. If you think about what, you know, TV news or radio news, you spend your life gathering a crowd to tell them the worst things that have happened. You know, a storm has come through and killed people, or a plane has crashed, or a politician has done the worst. So if you spend your life, you know, and you live for, what's the worst possible news I can give them today? Gather a crowd.
Give me flames.
Yeah.
When we worked in Jackson, Mississippi, Gary worked for this news director, Burt Case, and Burt was famous for saying, "Get me flames, Whitaker."
Yeah.
Right?
In a house fire, if you beat the fire department and got pictures of flames before they put it out, I mean, he'd buy beers for you for a week. These are on me. Whitaker got flames. So what I think what was appealing to us after being in TV news for so long, this was a magazine designed to point out, here's all the best things going on. Here's a new restaurant. Here's a top doctor. Here's a good neighborhood. You know, the thing that bad news sells and good news doesn't,
yep.
That's not true. If you gather good information that people can use, they'll pay for it.
But here's the thing. Does a magazine like 417, like any other regional or city magazine, do serious stories,
yes,
about social issues,
yes,
or problems?
Yes.
Or do you approach that,
but
too?
I think the approach is, and I think newspapers, anybody that does investigative journalism, their intention is, we're going to point out all this on the way to solving a problem so the world's better,
yeah,
when we're done. But they enjoy wallowing in the problem so long that you sometimes lose sight of that. Our approach to any time there's something, that's always with, how can we improve somebody's life? If it's even a small issue, or if it's a big issue. There are regional lifestyle magazines that take on big stuff, but it's the intention of how do we lift everybody at the end.
Do you ever have a hard time finding things? I mean, you're talking about one city, and it's not the biggest city in the U.S., right? So do you ever have a hard time finding stuff to talk about?
No,
we fill
have,
a whole magazine?
We have electricity.
Okay.
We have paved streets.
Well, wow.
Well, it's called 417 Magazine, and that's Southwest Missouri. Now, that includes Springfield,
yeah.
Joplin, Missouri,
okay.
Branson, Missouri. So our market area is almost a million people.
Okay.
Now, Springfield itself is, you know, less than 200,000. So it's different than a Chicago where you got one big thing and suburbs. It's a small town with a bunch of suburbs. But so that's one of the reasons we didn't change the name to 41 or to Springfield, because it serves more than Springfield.
Yeah.
And we just got this thing, the internet. Have you guys heard of that?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I hear there are phones without wires.
Oh,
and we're
my.
Looking forward to getting those too.
So you probably do a lot about Branson.
Because
there's a lot there, right?
Yeah. Now, there's like 7 million outsiders that come to Branson every year. But almost everybody in Springfield at some point, or in Southwest Missouri, goes there. And so we do a quarterly guide to Branson, new shows, new attractions, things like that.
Yeah.
So they're a good source of both stories and advertising.
So this internet thing you're talking about. I could go to 417mag.com and read online.
Yes.
How do you see the balance of paper and online? Are more people reading it online now than used to, or is it still a paper thing?
We have a downloadable iPad version of the magazine where you can go page by page through the magazine. But we also have a website that is not a replica of the magazine. Mm. It's more of a calendar of events.
I see.
And what we... once you publish a magazine, it's static, it's out there, and the website sort of serves as a supplement in between issues so that as things change and new events pop up, you can stay in touch.
And how do you use, Michelle, as you know, is a social media maven, right? So, and we'll get to the social media minute in a little bit, but how do you use social media to promote the magazine?
Well, the other part of our digital world is we have outbound newsletters. That we have one for, we have a dining newsletter, we have a shopping newsletter, we have a thing called Weekend Pass. So there are people coming into the website and there are things going out to them that they've signed up. And at this point, the second biggest revenue stream we have in our company, because now we think of ourselves more than a magazine, we think of ourselves as a brand.
Mm-hmm.
And our second biggest revenue stream is events, where we do... we have an event called Indulge, which is a women's night out, and they get to sample all sorts of food and fashion and cocktails and things like that. So we spend a lot of time using our social media to spread the word that those things are coming up, and we take pictures of those events, we share those, people share those with each other. So it creates kind of a virtual community as people talk about what they did in an event, or we'll take an article in a magazine and bring a link back to the website, and people can then vote or comment, and then that gets spread through social media. So it's just we think of it as a multi-legged animal, and the social media is just one of the legs.
Yeah, well, and you put people's pictures in the magazine, you mention them in the magazine, and they're your brand ambassadors for you, right? They share it out for you, so it's great. It's a great way to get more people to read the magazine.
Yeah. Well, at the back of the book, at the back of the magazine, all the nonprofit social galas we go to, mm-hmm. we put those in the magazine. We also, there's far more that we have that we can't put on the magazine, so we put them on the website, and people go and they find their pictures at, gala, then they share it all around. And so it just kind of keeps going. It kind of feeds on itself.
Social media-wise, Facebook, Twitter, do you tweet?
Uh-huh.
And Pinterest.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't think LinkedIn would be so much the thing.
No, personally LinkedIn, but it's not really part of the
right,
magazine.
But for the magazine, I mean.
Yeah, and then there's the, and that's probably my blind spot on all this. I think we're dabbling in Tumblr, and some of the things that we do end up on YouTube with links back to the magazine. If we do a photo shoot, we'll do a behind the scenes. One of our features, we were talking about, are the 10 most beautiful women, where people nominate women who are big into charity. And it's yes, you have to be smoking hot, but you also have to have a social conscience. And so we will do a photo shoot of their, because we dress them up and they are part of a fashion show. We'll shoot a video of that. That will end up on, on YouTube, and that gets shared around.
Yeah, I saw that part of your magazine. That was pretty intriguing, and I'm sure that all those ladies are definitely sharing and trying to get people to vote for them and all that, so it's a great way to do it, yeah.
So you write something, a publisher's thing, every month. What kind of stuff do you write about?
Well, often I'll ask, I'll say to the editor, our cover story, well, for example, the June cover story is about, we call it Summer Fun, and the big feature of this story was all the rivers and streams that you can float in southwest Missouri. And so we sort of rank them and how to get there and what to expect that day and at the end of your float trip. And so I wrote a little column about my death-defying experience on the Chattooga River back when Joan and I were first married. So a lot of times I'll just sort of, kind of the first word of here's what to expect in the rest of the magazine. This is sort of a welcome to the magazine, and here's the kind of things you'll read.
So it's not like when the general manager of the TV station goes on and does an editorial.
No, we're not endorsing anything. It's just sort of a, hey, welcome to the party, enjoy yourself, here's kind of some of the things you'll see.
So how do you see the future for magazines like yours? Niche magazines, is that the word?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what's happening right now is something called sponsored content, where as ancient...
Payola. We call that payola in the radio business. I recognize that.
Advertorial is another euphemism. But companies that... and almost, we were talking about earlier, it's almost like drinking from a fire hose, all the information that's coming after you. But sometimes a company wants to be able to control its message, and so they will hire us. There was a farmer's market that just opened in Springfield, and it's a new farmer's market with all farm-to-table folk. So they hired us to do a custom magazine about the different participants in the farmer's market. We published it in the magazine because it was readable, interesting stuff. But they also had us publish what we call overruns, so they could use that on their own. So, as a publishing company, you publish your title, but you can also make yourself available to publish custom content for companies.
Cool.
Some of them may never end up in your magazine. They just want your expertise.
Go ahead.
So, what's it like? You've got this deadline every month, right? I mean, how is that? What, is that crazy or what? Or do you have it down to a science now?
It's pretty much, and what we like about it is it's interdependent. The salespeople know they've got a certain point to sell ads. The editorial people know they've got certain deadlines to write the stories. Then you hand it off to the art department, they put it together. Then they hand it off to the printer, and they print it. Then you hand it off to the circulation guy, and he makes sure it gets out to everybody. So as an owner and a manager, what we've instilled in everybody is don't you be the one that screws this up for everybody.
Right.
And so I don't ever have to tell an editor, you got to meet a deadline. The editor knows because the art department is staring at them going, where's the magazine? And the circulation guy is going, where's the copies? So in a lot of ways, the fact that it's deadline driven, I'm not the boss. The deadline is the boss. And nobody wants to be the one that makes everybody miss the deadline. And, so it's sort of a built-in disciplinary system that I like.
The people I know who are selling media advertising, whether it's airtime on television or radio or space in a newspaper, are all boo-hooing because none of them are making the kind of money they used to make. What do you look for in a salesperson? What makes a good salesperson because probably it's if they're good at selling media, they're good at selling other stuff too. How do you hire those people?
Two things. You have to have ego strength. And you have to have empathy. If you can, on the empathy part, if you can get in the shoes of the client, understand what they need, talk to them on their terms, be sensitive to the fact that everybody's got a budget, and talk about how you can change, their outcome. And then you've got to have the ego strength so when they say no the first 15 times,
you don't crumble.
It's not about you. It's just whatever proposition I brought didn't have enough value to it, and you go back until... either figure out that those people really don't have the budget for it, or you find the people who do have the budget for it, and then you grow those. It's much easier to grow a client than to find a new one. But we do all sorts of tests, and we do all sorts of interviews for ego and empathy balance. And we have we'll give away a secret here.
Okay, please.
If you ever get interviewed by me, and at the end of the interview I say, so Catherine, Michelle, how do you think you did? And you go, oh, okay. I say, we've only got one position to fill here, and you seem like a really nice person, but I just don't think you're a good fit for the job. If your answer to me is, oh, okay, then you're gone. If your answer to me is something like, what? Did you not hear anything I said? That's the stupidest decision I've ever heard. The chance for you to hire a man, you're going to pass on enough, I will hire you that minute. Now, another question we ask in the interview.
I love that.
Now, has somebody actually said that to you?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, everybody that works for me. Because I say that to everybody. That, but in the interview, you give them, there are scores, you know, how are you presenting? How are you at this? And if they don't give themselves nines or tens, they're not really a legit candidate. And if in the interview, I say, who's the best salesperson you know? If they say, me, I hire him right there. We don't even get to the last question. But if they go, oh, my uncle or the guy who taught me how to sell vacuum cleaners door to door, because usually somebody is humble enough to say, I learned so much from this person. That's who I think it. But if they got somebody in mind, that's a clue. If they go, you know, I never really thought about that, then they're probably really not a superstar. But when you tell somebody, how did you think you do, and they think they did very well, and then you take the job away from them, if they just, that's what they're going to do when somebody says no to them in the field. They're going to go, oh, okay. But the one who comes roaring back, I had a lady almost come across the table with me. And she's our best salesperson. She's been with us, you know, 10 years now. And when I told her, Deb, I think you know, seem like a nice person. I just don't think it's a good job, good fit for you. What? Have you not heard anything I said? And so
it's good.
I
really
know.
Good. All right. That. So that's how you hire good salespeople. How do you keep them?
Well, you compensate them, and you get
but
out
it's
of.
It's not just about money, is it? For salespeople.
Salespeople like to win. They're competitive, and the myth that you can build teamwork in a sales team. You can, but you have to understand within that team, the individual members of the team are trying to beat the daylights out of each other. We do a thing on Monday morning where we announce, here's the revenue for the week. You know, we put $50,000 on the books this week. Michelle did 10, Catherine did 10, Gary did 30, and everybody cheers. Well, next week, Catherine is going to kill to make sure she gets listed, named as the number one salesperson. And so what happens is during the week, as people are trying to close business, our salespeople can legitimately say, listen, if you could make a decision this week, it'd be great, because I'm in a sales contest. Well, we're always in a sales contest. But they love, you know, they as a team, they like hitting team marks.
Sure.
And since we're a profit-sharing company, the whole company is cheering for them to have a good week and for them to have a profitable quarter because they all get paid. But they love beating each other. And we get these meetings, they go, I'm on a bad roll. I haven't been number one in 3 weeks. And damn it, next Monday, I'm going to be the top, you know, revenue generator. So you can build a team, but they will try to beat each other's brains out. You just have to watch for them not sabotaging each other. And
fight fair.
Yeah,
fight fair. social media. Oh, do you have a question?
Well, I just wanted to ask about social media.
Yeah.
So who does the social media for your magazine? Not for your clients, but for your magazine.
We have a digital team.
Okay.
And they're responsible for the website. They're responsible for the outbound newsletters. They're responsible for the Facebook. And when I say we have a team, almost everybody on the magazine staff has something to do with that.
Great.
Production people, you know, create some of the ads that go under our online contest. But we have a three or four person digital team, and they're really there to make sure that we're getting the word out, everybody's sharing things, we're linking things back and forth. And it's one gal's, you know, pretty much full time job to make sure our brand is out there in every channel as often as possible.
So do you find that you get quite a bit of engagement on Facebook for your magazine? I mean, all the time. Yeah, and people love it, right?
Yeah, I mean, they love to, you know, if they find something in the magazine they like sharing it with their friends.
Right.
And we do contests where, let's say if you're a client and one example is a dentist, and we're going to give a makeover, you know, or braces away or something, or a hairdresser. We're going to give away a spa day away. And we'll put that contest up online, and then people will start entering, and then the client gets all the entries. They only give away one spa day, but then they've got all these email addresses or Facebook contacts of people that they can then follow up with. So, you know, it's kind of a sharing mania with a dollar purpose.
Right. I love that, sharing mania. That's a great place to be. If you're going to do a sharing mania, it's got to be on Facebook. You know, Facebook, Catherine, just introduced, for real, the hashtag. I mean, people have been using hashtags on Facebook, but now Facebook has officially incorporated them in.
What do you think? I never got the whole hashtag thing because I don't tweet much.
And I
don't understand all this crap that people put a hashtag in front of. What is that? But I hashtagged today.
Yeah,
I posted something. You know, I had this unfortunate thing in the storm where a tree branch went through the windshield of the car, had to have it towed, blah, blah, blah. But State Farm really did a nice job of handling everything, so I put that on Facebook that, you know,
hashtag.
Everything's getting fixed, and hashtag I love State Farm. And do you
is
know
it trending?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think so, because somebody already posted, what are you, crazy? Apparently not a big State Farm fan, but anyway, I'm trying to get with it. What do I need to know about hashtags?
Well, I think one of the things you need to know is if you've gotten the Facebook graph search on your Facebook account, which if you haven't, you will soon, that whole Facebook hashtag thing kind of incorporates with that because you have a kind of an enhanced search in Facebook, and you can really find a lot more stuff.
Oh, swell, because there's not enough stuff
there
already.
I know.
Yeah. I don't want to find anything else. It's enough.
I know. It's a lot. And so the hashtags kind of go along with that. But, you know, one of the things I've noticed is that some people get crazy with the hashtags. They put like 10 hashtags in one post, or every word in the post is a hashtag, and you're thinking, come on, this has got to stop.
Now, this means they don't really know how to do it, right? They don't get it?
Maybe, I don't know. It's
throwing
annoying.
Stuff against the wall to see if anything sticks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's exactly. I think maybe one or two is a good idea per post. Let's not make every word, because it's really hard to read. So I think the pendulum will swing back. But you know what? Give it a shot. Give the hashtag a shot.
All right. So we should post this link with hashtag 417 magazine.
Well, yeah,
magazine,
that too. 417
right?
magazine.
Sure. And hashtag
and
BizBuzz.
And hashtag, that's right.
Do you think we could get BizBuzz to be trending?
We'll give it a shot.
We have a Facebook page, but we are not that well-liked yet, I'm sorry to say.
We're getting there.
Well, we are, but slowly. But now that we have this show, I think it's going to be golden.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're on your way.
People will hashtag us all over the place. Boy.
Boy.
All right, so you're the publisher. Your wife is the
general manager.
General manager.
She says she generally manages.
If you're listening, you just heard that.
And your kids both work at the magazine, too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a whole Whitaker family thing. Do you ever have, I mean, there are a lot of family businesses, and some of them fall apart because families do. Do you ever have things where you think, sheesh, here we've got this at work, then we bring it home? Talk about family and work together.
Well, we're just very lucky, and I give Joan the credit because she's always been the glue, but she has made it so our daughter is our sales manager. She manages those salespeople I'm talking about. That she's the one that keeps that team together and keeps them competing but still pulling together. Our son is the circulation manager and over the digital team, so he's the one growing the website, the newsletters, all the social media. And then we've got a marketing team. Anyway, but the four of us, not only do we work together, we get together on the weekends. We enjoy each other, and we respect the work that each other's doing. And Joan and I are trying to slowly pass the company on, and we're giving the kids increased, you know, profit shares and responsibilities so we can travel and see, you know, people like you.
Excellent. Love that. Well, so
the best way to know if they can make a good decision in your absence is to be absent.
I think that's hard for a lot of the first generation part of a family in a business,
mm-hmm.
don't you think?
Yeah.
Like letting go of it a little bit and letting the younger people step in, I think that can be really tough.
Well, entrepreneurs sometimes think that their skill is the business. And as long as they're doing, you know, the drywalling or whatever it is, that's the business. We figured out a long time ago we need to replace ourselves, set up an organizational chart, figure out all the jobs that we do, and then one by one replace those jobs with somebody that can do them better than us. And then you really have a business. Otherwise, you've just bought yourself a job.
All right, that's an excellent way to finish. I like that.
It is.
Because none of us want to buy ourselves a job. We had jobs in the old days, right? My guest is Gary Whitaker from 417 Magazine in Springfield, Missouri. Of course, Michelle Rempel is here. I'm Catherine Johns, and this is BizBuzz Radio. BizBuzz is part of the Linked Local Network. And on the Linked Local Network, you know what we always say, link locally and connect globally. Next week, social media. We're going to deep dive.
Good job. Good.